Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio. Starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is six.
Very good.
I just winged it too. I didn't even really know. How's everybody doing today, this evening?
I mean, do you ever really know? I don't think you
I'm not really. I ain't really, I took a shot at it. I came up. How's everybody feeling?
I'm okay now that the rain stopped. That weather we had past couple of days was nasty.
Is this supposed to be it? Is it supposed to get decent now? Or is that that's the stuff for tonight?
I heard somebody say it's supposed to be like 85 this weekend.
Yeah, we're hitting the 80s on Friday and Saturday, but then we're going back into the 60s supposed to. I mean, it was supposed to rain all day today too, and it didn't, thank goodness. So
yeah, it was just dreary all day.
Yeah, I see the 60s.
Short set.
Well, not so fast, because I see the 60s and the 50s back on the horizon for the end of next week. So we just,
and the 50s?
57 next Friday, which is going to be Cinco de Mayo.
That's crazy.
57. That's crazy. Ugh.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So let's go and get this thing started up. I haven't asked this in a while, but are there any shout outs?
Nah.
I want to shout out Country Cousin Lauren Grant and George 2.0 and the whole HBCU Spring Coming crew. They had their third annual Spring Coming
this weekend pass.
Yeah, and despite the weather working against them on Saturday, which is the one outdoor event, they had a really great turnout for all their stuff. You know, it's a thing now. You know, this year they gave away 3 scholarships.
Oh, wow.
They had, major partners and sponsors, the Griot, Ford.
Oh, really?
But yeah, it's like a real, it's a real, real, real thing. And I mean, they hit the tipping point quick. So I'm just really proud of them. It blew up so fast.
Did you go to both nights? Both days, rather?
No, I did not go out on the yard on Saturday because it was raining and cold, and that combination for me is really dangerous. A matter of fact, I think Lauren's battling the flu right now. But I went, they had an after set, like a kickback at a few different, it was a few different bars on Lenox you could hit. So like Basement of the Cove, Corner Social, Gin Fizz, they had DJs at all three. You go to all three, so like I went to Corner Social, which was packed. And then I went to Gin Fizz, which got packed. Okay. And then Sunday I went to Have Plenty. And there was another event on Friday night that I didn't go to.
How was the Have Plenty?
It was cool. I mean, they did it at Solomon and Cruft, which is a pretty good
spot. I was about to ask you where, so you do it at Solomon and Cruft now? Okay.
Yeah, they did it at Solomon and Cruft, which is a pretty big spot. I mean, Lauren right now is saying that she might only do Have Plenty, for Spring Coming. In New York. Because she's doing it in so many other cities.
Yeah, so she's moving around, right?
Yeah, so she's debating on that. Shout out to Irene from For Shits and Giggles. Saw her.
Okay.
Friend to the show. Yeah, but it's just great to see this idea kind of blow up. And, people are coming from all over the country to come. That type of thing is dope.
Yeah.
It's dope to see people out and representing.
Good. You got any shout outs, bro?
Nah, I ain't really. I'm good.
I don't know if it's a shout out, but I do want to, shout out to the NBA playoffs. I've been watching mad basketball every night. And the playoffs have been really good. A lot of intense games, a lot of teams that people didn't think was going to be this good or good. It's been good TV. It's been stopped me from watching a bunch of other stuff because they're playing 3 or 4 games a night.
Yeah, it's been a lot. First round is usually I kind of get in it toward the conference finals.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't start this early either.
Actually, shout out to ESPN.
Oh, yeah, I was going to mention that.
For letting off shots.
100. They laid off 100 people today.
No, well, on air personalities.
No, no, it wasn't 100 on air. It was 100. Period. Okay. It was on air.
It was
plus.
It was a lot of.
On airs. It was a lot of on airs, and then a lot of some writers and some behind the scenes. They like really like they cut like a huge chunk of their staff in one day.
That is, listen, man. That is understandable. Even though that's Mickey Mouse over there, his pockets are to infinity and beyond.
Exactly.
Okay. And, you know, shout out to Michael Smith and Jermell Hill. I know that they're doing the 6 p.m. Sports Center now. And, you know, they've really sort of geared that toward a lot more pop culture and, you know, having their own sort of special and unique take on things has been really, really interesting. I wonder what those numbers look like. But I think that that's a part of it too. I felt like ESPN was getting a little stale. The content was kind of all over the place. They didn't really have it streamlined. And there was just a lot, man. You look on a show, it's 5-6 people on set.
Every single show.
That's a lot of people.
Yep. And it's, and, I've been looking, you know, throughout the day to see some of the people that they let go. Some of them are kind of younger, but some of the, you know, a lot of the people are definitely like, you know, some older folks got let go too.
Linnell Moore got let go.
Oh, they let Lynn go?
Yeah, I mean, listen, Lynn, you know, let's be fair. You had a 21 year run.
21.
Like that's a hell of a second career, bro.
At college basketball, because I don't know how many college kids Lynn is actually talking to at his age. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, Lynn got to be 75, bro.
Yeah, he's older. He's definitely older.
He's 70. I'm saying like he's not a young fly 70.
That's what I'm saying.
AAU leagues.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I don't know how many he knows the game, but I don't know how in touch he was with the new generation.
Yeah.
You know, so Trent Dilfer and a lot of people that got that goal. So we definitely wanted to say.
Well, Trent, you know, God bless him, but you know, there was some people that wasn't that good. So
yeah, that too. First thing I want to talk about is let me look up on here on my screen. Let's jump right in to fix my life. hold on. Before we do that, have either one of y'all watched the show that come on after the John Gray guy?
No.
Watched the first episode. I'll let you jump in. I watched the first episode.
Yeah, well, it's only been two. So I mean, so there's a show on OWN called The Book of John Gray. And he's a preacher. I guess he's like the associate pastor at the Joel Osteen's church, Lakewood in Houston. And it's about, you know, obviously like his life and his family it's a nice, kind of interesting. It's not every, they deal with stuff. It's only I don't think it's an hour. I don't know if it might be an hour. I don't know, but like some of his stuff is kind of silly, but then they also deal with him dealing with stuff at the church. And like this week past, there was a woman, there was a couple with a guy, you know, and a woman were together for a long time. He had cheated on her, that he wouldn't marry her. So he kind of does a counseling kind of thing too. And then along with his kind of stuff, I mean, you know, it's not going to be a blockbuster, but it's like a nice little show. If you home one rainy Saturday night, you know, you could check it out, you know, see what it's like. Let's talk about the I Fixed My Life. So Ayanna started her season with a two-part show on Nefi, who's Keisha Cole's sister, as most of us know.
Nefertiria.
And it's not Nefertiria, and I thought it was 2-9. It's actually Nefertiti.
Okay, but they kept calling her Nefertiria.
I thought it was Nefertiti. Is it Nefertiti?
No, because my whole thing was it should be Nefertiti, but...
But they got to spin it.
Decided she's gonna put a spin on that shit.
Area on
it. Nefertiria.
Okay, my fault.
So it then, should be Nefertiti. It absolutely should be, but it's Nefertiria.
So
because black people.
Because we do what we do. So her and her husband Solo, and so this is the second part with them discussing their issues. And you know, a lot of people felt like Ayanna was going in super hard on Nefi and giving Solo passes. So I wanted to know what y'all thought about the ending of this show. And on the next week, by the way, they got one of them Jackson boys on there for 3T. But anyway,
who's like grown as fuck?
Yeah. But
what y'all think about? This second part, I was kind of like, whatever. To be honest with you, it was kind of redundant. It was just more like, I mean, I feel like she did Nephi a bit of a disservice because we said this last week. She didn't really take time to really dig into Nephi's shit.
You mean like her background and her past?
Yeah, like where this comes from, or like her relationship with her mom, or her relationship even with her grandma, or like her growing up on the street, like all of that stuff that feeds into the attitude she has now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and granted, I'm sure there's a lot of stuff we didn't see on camera, but you know, Nephi was kind of right. She was telling Ayana, like, you just kind of barking at me. I mean, I don't think those were her exact words, but basically she was telling Ayana, like, you just kind of fussing at me. But you're really like coddling him. So she dug all into Nephi's husband's past. She knew he was sexually abused. Mm-hmm. She knew all this other shit. But like, I don't feel like she went that deep into Nephi's shit. So like, how much are you really helping? You know, that's my thing. Because she might have been trying to help their marriage, which eventually they decided to split according to the end credits, which may have been for the best. Mm-hmm. But are you really helping Nephi?
I felt that, but I mean, I will say this though. I mean, and you know, things can be edited and spun any which way they can, but I also felt that was interesting that, in this episode, how, Ayana went in on Nephi about, you know, putting stuff on the gram and like, you know, acting like basically that she was just acting.
Oh, like this was there to just help her as a personality.
Exactly.
That was definitely interesting.
And I was I'm really, you know, talking shit, obviously, but I'm wondering if, you know, Ayana was kind of sensing that all along, like, you're not really taking this seriously. You just want to be on TV. So I'm going to, you know, I'm going to go ham on you.
Which I think is possible. And, you know, like, who really does that? Like, you are like, Nephi's like, I'm on my way to set. You know,
yeah,
you
got my hair's makeup done. Artist
in the car. Yeah, yeah. You know, keep me on point.
You know what? I'm like, look, man, you know, I love Ayana, but like, let's cut the shit here. Okay. You pulled Nephi in for that. Like, don't pretend like she didn't come with all of those things and you guys were banking on that. Okay. Like, that's the shit that bugs me out. Like, you guys knew what you were getting. And then you sort of used that as a tool to be angry with the person. You telling me that there was nobody else who was in a much better space and open for help and therapy, right? Other than Nephi and Solo. No, you picked Nephi and Solo because you would get eyes. Nephi understands that if she says, I'm going to set, and she shows the pictures with her hair done, that guess what people are going to do? They're going to tune in. So when her agents go and say, you know, this was the highest rated Ayana series that featured Nephi or whatever the case may be, and try to get her on another show. Like, this is what she does. Like, this is what I'm saying. It's like we understand what she brings to the table. We hate it, but we understand what she brings to the table. And then it's like we're mad at ourselves for engaging in what she brought to the table. It's like we all got that one cousin who been a fuck up all his life. You know what I'm saying? You don't really want to invite him to the graduations. You don't want to have him at Thanksgiving, right? But when that nigga go upside your head, he the first person you call. Why? Because you know he gonna get busy.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. Like, don't. I just feel like I understand Nephi's point, and like, yo, like, this is what I do. Like, this is what she does. Why are we? Making this into something like Nephi don't fucking work at the Walmart. That's why y'all have her on the show.
Yeah, I mean, I see your point, but it's also, I mean, again, you know, we know it's TV, but I guess at some point, I guess with the way the dude Solo was basically falling apart there, you know, I think I almost saw a chance to, you know, maybe try to do some type of real work and whatnot. But meanwhile, so you got one guy who's falling apart and, you know, having nervous breakdowns, and you got his wife, you know, not just another character on the show, but like his wife, his legal wife, is basically like, oh, whatever, like, you know, I'm just getting my hair done and I'm just doing this to get to the next lick.
Yeah, so, I mean, but we don't know if his shit was an act too. I'm just saying, man, like we can't pick and choose, man. Like we can't pick and choose, okay? I know Daryl is a good guy, but he gonna steal a little bit. He not gonna steal all my money. He gonna steal like $20, right? If I, you know, like that's a part of the game. I'm just saying, man, like this is what she is. And it's like, we're mad at what she is, but like, yo, my nigga, you guys chose to sit down and have her on TV. So don't now ridicule her and like loathe her because she did what she has always done. And honestly, well,
and that's why they booked her, because they knew she'd be good TV.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly, because she's going to be on the gram posting the pictures, and she's going to do all that. You know why? Because Charlene, who worked at the phone company, and she wrote To Fix My Life about her husband, who ain't been shit, and y'all ain't pick her, okay? Y'all pick Neffy. They living out of a fucking hotel room, okay? So I don't know, you know, what other people's living situations are, but when I'm living in a hotel room, shit just got really real.
Yeah, yeah.
And whatever I need to do to figure out, nigga, she can get a hosting gig because she posted something on the gram and get a little, you know, $300-$400 and some chicken dinners. So what?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think I feel like I don't know, was trying to do the work.
Nah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think she does, and I think that there are certain instances when the producers, and I don't know how heavily she's involved with the casting of, you know, what they're going to address. I don't have any insight to that. But what I'm saying is, you can't tell me that the people that they have there are the only people who wrote into the show, okay? You guys picked them because someone went out and sought them. A producer, a talent agent, a talent wrangler, somebody went out and found them. Cause if you tell me, cause I'm almost positive Neffy ain't writing no damn email on her Gmail account to the Iyanla show.
Right.
Mm. Hey, what you think,
man? I'm pretty sure Melly was Neffy wasn't like, Iyanla, please come fix my life.
What you think, man?
I mean, it's to say, I agree with Sean. Like, you chose Neffy because you knew she was gonna be good TV. You know she's messy. You know there's something there. I mean, anybody they pick is gonna be troubled, so that they can have something exciting.
Exactly.
So that Iyanla can have a moment where she hits the table and says, not on my watch. Or where, you know, she says, excuse me. Da-da-da-da. You know, I mean, y'all already know I'm skeptical of how much Iyanla ever actually helps any situation ever.
Anyway. I was just about to say, like, and that's the other thing too, like, I felt like, and again, I like her, and I felt like she really did start this show as a therapeutic way, and it made sense. And if you guys notice, it wasn't until the second season where I believe she started to have like Evelyn and Erica Jean, who was on Love & Hip Hop, when she started to dive into those places was when we started to get these shows. Because initially, right, it was every week there was like a different couple or right, a different family. And she would go in and they would, you know, have these conversations or whatever. And now it just seems like, hey, if I got an 8-episode run or a 10-episode run and I can get one or two of these guys to sort of jumpstart this. And that's the other thing too. Like they put that shit on first because they knew what it was going to do.
Right. And they're mining, and they are mining the reality TV, caves because of the fact that they know it's messy.
And they have audiences. They have people right, who are going to come in. So it's not like, and I know it doesn't seem like a lot, but the difference between, you know, getting a 1-3, and I'm just throwing numbers out there, I don't know her ratings, but the difference between getting a 1-3 or 1-7 might be having Neffy on there. You know what I'm saying? I feel like she is what she is, and people only like her when it's to their benefit, and then they shit and sort of berate her and look at her with disgust when it's no longer beneficial for them.
Right, right.
So, did Jeff come back? I think we lost him.
He's here, but it looks like he's on mute. Jeff, are you there? Lord knows I don't want to be going into his topics for next time. Hold on. There he is.
It was muted for some reason. I don't know why.
Okay.
Yeah, everything was muted. That's cool. Okay. I'm sorry, y'all. I was going to say, yeah, well, shit, I don't know. I am. I'm going to watch this week, too, with the damn three.
Well, yeah, I'm going to watch boy. With the Jackson boy.
I mean, I'm going to keep watching, because
why not? Because why not? You know? Shit. You know? Fix somebody.
Yeah.
fix that half-shaven head. She got, like, the woman, I didn't realize she has the whole base of her head shaved.
You know.
No, it's not the side. It's the whole lower. It's the whole base.
Yo, leave her alone.
She got a Caesar on the bottom and a perm on the top.
Look, she's going to cut some weight now. Mr. Cecil, you know what I'm saying, probably taking her out for a nice little night on the town or
exactly.
something. Exactly. Mr. Earl.
Going to see Frankie Beverly and them, and
yeah, going to a little jazz club.
Yeah, yeah, you know, Najee, going to see Najee and show it off, right? This shit, let them live. I wanted to also mention since we're on the reality thing, the Real Housewives of Atlanta reunion, which is as we said before, four parts. Part two was this past week. Y'all both watch it?
Yeah.
Did we watch which?
The part two of Real Housewives reunion.
Yeah, I'm just like, Bravo gonna just really make us watch all four of these fucking episodes to get to the
all
good shit.
Four of them.
Cause this shit was a snooze fest to me.
Like, this one was what basically like Phaedra and
it was Sheree.
Sheree and Bob. Yeah, Sheree and Bob.
Well, Bob comes on next episode.
Sheree talking about the abuse.
Yeah, recapping everything with Sheree and something else with Kenya, but I don't remember what. And a little bit more with Phaedra and Candy, with Candy basically talking about Phaedra trying to make things difficult for her and possibly coaching homeboy Johnny, whatever his name is, and some stuff like that.
Yeah.
The biggest thing, I think, was... Oh, and Portia saying she felt bullied. Yeah.
That's
which girl, whatever.
That's Portia.
That's that therapy shit. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with therapy. This is not an anti-therapy message here, but this new wave of everything is I'm bullied. Like you fucking control your surroundings and you're a fucking adult, okay? And stop acting like you're not partaking in the messy shit that is putting people in positions to bark at you the way they are.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't like that too. Portia's, I mean, bless her. She's, like we always say, she's a beautiful girl, but she's dim as hell. And she be trying to make some sense out of some shit, but she can't really quite get her thoughts together. She can't quite get right. You know, she's fighting hard to not just jump out of the chair and start swinging because I think that's what her instincts tell her to do.
But, yeah, because I think because she is not as articulate as some of the other women and her tongue is not as sharp as them, mm-hmm. that because she gets frustrated, like, remember, these are all real business women, right? Like, they go in and they negotiate and mm-hmm. Cynthia has an agent and Kenya does her shit and mm-hmm. Candy's all about her business. Phaedra's a lawyer by trade. You know what I'm saying? Like, they are often, so they're quick. And yeah. I think that her frustrations comes when she's not able to keep up with them in that manner yeah. and not be as slick. And so that's when that anger sort of boils up inside of her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What do we think about the whole thing with Candy and Phaedra kind of going and back and forth like that? Like, Phaedra's just looking terrible on these.
She does. Like, honestly.
She really does. I'm just waiting for whatever the big moment is that's really going to happen.
The one that makes your girl
get up. Well, and also, we finally see from the previews that for next week, in addition to all we've heard about Phaedra having fraudulent paperwork and all this other stuff, apparently, Portia is going to say that Phaedra is the person who told her that Candy said her and Todd were trying to drug Portia and get her into a sex den.
Mm.
She's apparently about to be like, well, Faith was the one who said it.
That sounds very reasonable.
It sounds very reasonable. Sounds very accurate. Which again speaks to Phaedra sitting chilling all season.
The fact that she and Candy
are legit fighting over seeds that Phaedra planted.
Mm-hmm. And she's sitting there chilling.
The fact that she sat there on camera and accepted the meeting with this young man, Johnny, advised him. And I don't necessarily know if that was attorney-client privilege, the way she explained on the thing.
Well, it also wouldn't be because it was on motherfucking camera.
Yeah, and the fact that...
So that broke it right there.
And you like...
And also, he wasn't her client.
Yeah, I was going to say, he wasn't your client. You took him into another law firm.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you were aiding him. And guess what? Then just fucking say that.
Yeah, don't
act pretending.
Yeah, don't get on there and be like, "Well, that wasn't my client. I wasn't worrying about you." It's like, what?
Look, she should have said, "Look, you about your business, and I'm about mine." And he came into my office as a client to an attorney, which that is my profession. Mm-hmm. So I'm not telling a client that they should leave. And if that's a conflict with you, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah,
I don't know what to tell you. This is what the fuck I do.
But that's the thing. Phaedra always tries to, you know, act like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, what is this?
Yeah, like trying to play, you know, look, man, like, country dumb only works but so many times. Okay.
Yeah.
You can only do country dumb a few times. Mm-hmm. And then you're the annoying
country dumb
person.
Country dumb or country or like Southern Belle, I don't do messy. Like, she tries to act like she's above the fray. Yeah. It's the same issue that I had. I mean, it's a little different, but it's a similar issue that I had with Tara on Love & Hip Hop New York, and that I have with Mimi. And that I have with Mimi on Love & Hip Hop Atlanta. Like, y'all bros want to be acting like y'all so fucking high class and you're too good for this shit, but you be the main ones, like, just in some, like, yeah, like, you're messy, Phaedra. You are messy. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. You're messy. And and maybe you don't flat out lie, but you definitely
fudge.
Distort the truth.
Yeah, you like, fudge you that bend truth.
It. Yeah, you bend it.
Yeah, you're
massively.
Fudge it. Yeah. So, have y'all been watching The Real Housewives of Potomac that come on afterwards?
Yeah, I've been watching that.
I try.
What do you think about this season?
I don't know how I feel about this new chick. She annoys me.
Oh, Monique from Atlanta.
Yeah, she annoys me. I mean, I get that Giselle annoys a lot of people, and Monique, I guess, was brought in to kind of be her match and her foil, but she's so new money to me. It's so annoying. Like,
yeah.
It's so annoying.
Their bedroom
was decorated horribly, and there was a shoebox from Aldo. Like, if I own four homes, I don't think I'm shopping at Aldo.
Somebody else pointed that out to me.
I was like,
yo, they're going to flame her ass on Twitter with that.
Yeah, I was like, Aldo? Is it Aldo shoot? Even Greg was like, Aldo? And I was like, you know what I mean? It was just kind
of
like, nah,
yeah.
Who's
doing that? And I know what irked me about her was on the first show, she was they were at home, her and her husband, and they just got two sons. They're little. They were like 5 and 7 or 4 and 6. And she was like, we got to start looking at a new house because it's 9,000 square foot, 5-bedroom home.
Yeah.
We outgrowing this. I'm like, what the fuck
come
are you
on,
talking
babe.
About? You know what I'm saying? 9,000 square feet.
She's doing a lot.
You're doing
and
a lot.
And also, like, yo, the way the shit with her and his mom.
Yeah, that was ill.
Yo.
That was ill because his mom was.
Is not
his
feeling.
Mom was
she ain't,
his
she
mom
ain't
was
too particular. She ain't too particular about her.
Yeah. Her mom was country mean.
Like, country mean.
Yeah,
and very
I
much
bet,
like,
I
know, I know she called her hussy when she ain't around.
Oh,
I know it.
Oh, heifer?
I know it. Yeah, hussy
yo,
and heifer.
Yo, heifer.
Fast ass heifer.
I let her know. Nah, you know, yeah. I bet
her and Aretha Franklin would get along just fine.
Exactly.
At barbecue.
Cursing out everybody.
Everybody.
And then what? One last thing before you move on. What do we think about the I think Robin and Juan Dixon still living together, sleeping together,
but they
divorced. I'm like,
listen, it's complicated. Robin's trying
to protect her boys, and I get it. But like at this point, they're in Robin's house.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, like she's the one. To me, she's the one making all the sacrifice, and Juan gets all the convenience. That's the way
she
I hear it.
Wow, sure. I think Robin deals with a lot. I think she's dealing with probably some anxiety about separating from him.
Mm-hmm.
They've been high school sweethearts. They've been together for a long time. I don't think she knows another life. And I think that she's probably afraid to venture off into this new world. And we always talked about this, you know, she's not the spring chicken, that you know, is hot in the street with the young ballers.
I
don't get the vibe that she's enamored with money. I mean, obviously they're having some money troubles, and but I never got the sense from her that money was a such a huge part of her.
My man gotta be making that.
I don't get that at all. And I think it's probably, I think the kids have something to do with it, but I also think there's a convenience. And I also think too that she feels a sense of obligation, because you know what, when everything was great, I was here. And I ate the crow, right? Yeah. And I probably dealt with some infidelity when shit wasn't right. And now this is a tough road for him as well. You know, he's out here trying, I think he's coaching now.
Yeah, he's coaching.
You know, he's trying to work his way up. And I mean, they're not poor people broke, they're rich people broke. So it's not really the same. I mean, they're just trying to figure it out. I mean, I don't think that that's that complicated. I think, you know, you're having sex with somebody you've known all your life and you're comfortable. I mean, until she's ready to actually venture off into the world of dating,
it looks like that's gonna be never.
And that's the thing, right?
And like, maybe when the boys get older and like,
I mean, but by the time the boys get older, she'll be in her 50s.
Like, not that much older, but I mean, right now the oldest one is what, like 9?
Yeah, look like about
maybe in another 3 or 4 years. Like, you know, at some point she's gonna get tired of this shit.
Mom in life too, Lil Juan.
Word.
Okay, now go watch your little brother.
Don't come down here no more. I'll be back. Don't call me unless his house burning down.
Mr. Curtis coming over here. Y'all be nice to him. Now.
Exactly. He's taking me out to a nice movie. You ready to go, Curtis?
I'm gonna tell you what I don't like though about the show. I definitely feel like, what's hard to watch is Giselle on screen. Obviously she is she's an attractive woman and she has a very big personality and she knows it. And I think that they have, you know, sort of, enticed her or told her, you know, play it up.
Yeah.
And it's just a lot, like she's a lot on camera. It's just, it's always a lot going on with her.
So wait,
I'm just not crazy about it.
What do we think it's a purposeful thing that so many of them are so high yellow on this show? Is a colorism thing?
I think that's about the show. But I also think that's about
the Maryland DC.
I think it's about the Potomac circle. Yeah. And also, it probably also depends on who they went to first. Cause you know, usually they have one girl that they cast first for the show and she helps bring in the rest of the people.
I suspect they went to the older woman, Karen.
You think it was Karen? I was thinking it might've been Giselle.
I think it might've been Giselle.
Cause she gives me the feeling of being like an anchor. Like weirdly, I think Nene was one of the anchors for Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
I think. And like, you can always kind of tell who it is on each show. Just kind of based on how much attention they get, how their storylines are, and then after a while, how comfortable they are with Andy in the reunions or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Giselle's in the middle of the opening shot now. So like clearly she's the centerpiece. Mm. And I do think, like you said, Sean, like she's, and maybe she was last season too, I didn't pay attention, but she's definitely playing it up. Like I'm the centerpiece of the show. Yeah.
She was last year a bit. And I did watch last year and I was interested. I actually really, my favorite person on that show actually is Karen's husband.
The Mr. Bill Gates or whatever.
Because he wild normal.
Yeah, he's just wild. Like he definitely looked like he put on his old nigga sandals and go out and try to cook on the grill.
Yeah.
Be burning shit up because he can't really cook on the grill.
Got him a little taste.
He just humors Karen. Like he just be like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, listen, and you know, for him, you know, Karen's, you know, she's kept it together. I mean, I don't know if there's, you know, any enhancements or whatever, but she's kept it together. Karen's got to be, you know, mid-50s. You know, she came to him with a son already. They have a real life and a real relationship. And,
yeah, for sure.
You know, and that's a real family. I mean, and that's the thing. It's like, it's boring. Like, you know, your son's an adult. He left the house. Your daughter's at college.
Yeah. Now
I mean, that's not really.
And she really literally doesn't know what to do herself.
Yeah.
And you know, listen, to me, you know, that's something interesting, you know, follow that, not just, you know, sort of her, you know, and to me, she's not really age appropriate with those women. They're not.
Nah, she's much older than
agreed.
Them.
Agreed.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And when I say age appropriate, I mean also, I hate using this word, but for lack of a better term, you know, a bit of class status, like, you know, she's been around some bread for a long time.
Yeah.
And usually women who are, you know, 20, 25 years having money like that are not really hanging out with the girl who's like, you know, getting naked in front of somebody. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's just like,
yeah,
it's not,
yeah, it's not cool.
She's Jack and Jill type shit.
Like, yeah, all day, you know, all day. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I enjoy Sunday night after Real Housewives goes on. It's like, to me, it's a bit lighter.
Oh, hold on. What? I gotta say this. Old girl Charisse.
I think I went to Morgan with her.
You said yeah, you that told us before. That.
Yo,
yeah.
Yo, she's putting a champagne room in her house, right?
Yeah.
For $92,000.
She's doing a lot. Like, is it actual champagne coming out of fixtures? Like, I don't understand.
My nigga. Like, just because you got it, don't mean you need to spend it. Yeah.
Like also, no matter how well you guys invested, your husband is coaching a women's college basketball team right now. Like, that money ain't really just, some different decisions, boo.
It's just, even if you had to be objective, if you went to go sell your house, people are not necessarily saying, I need a champagne room. Like, that's not...
You're bringing the value down.
Yeah, it's like, that's not, you know, you spend $92,000 on an extension of the house. You spend $92,000 on redoing your bathrooms and your kitchen, modernizing the home. You don't spend $92,000. I mean, you know, look, God bless her. It's her bread. I don't want to be in her pockets. But like, if I wanted a cigar room, like, okay, dude, like $8,500 is my budget. Figure it out.
Yeah. I can give you $92,000.
Yeah. $92,000?
Yeah. That's crazy.
You get $9,200.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I gotta go to homecoming this year because I'm almost sure I went to school with a Vab. I don't remember too many people from college no more, but whatever. That's a whole different conversation. I wanted to mention, did we talk about Mary and Ken Do before? Have we talked about this?
I think we did. I think, because
you know,
it
keeps ratcheting it up. Basically, obviously, Mary's got an album coming out, so she's been on doing some press and stuff, and there's more and more stuff coming out. Apparently, she let out that Ken Do has spent a total of $420,000 on the side lady, which is $420,000. Like, I'm like, yo, my man, like, I hope you plan on basically marrying this girl, because
that's a lot.
That's $42,000 a year for 10 years. Like, that's a salary.
That's a huge. Yeah, exactly. Like, on what? I guess on travel and on shopping and car, tricking off. I guess I'm like, but I'm also like, well, how do you even have that much time to trick off that much money? Like, I guess you just stop going on the road with Mary and all that. I guess.
I mean, you figure it out when you want to figure it out.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You figure it out when you want to figure it out.
Find the time.
That might have been rent for, you know, a spot where when I get a second, I come through.
Yeah.
And when I'm not, you know, figure your life out.
So, I mean, are your people even talking about this Mary thing? Nobody cares.
I mean, I don't think. Like, Mary and Ken Do weren't one of those celebrity couples where you'd be like, oh, Mary and Ken Do broke up. Yeah. Oh, my God. All anybody's talking about is, like, are we going to get a good Mary album out of this?
That's not even that hot of a topic.
And I got to say, too, you know, a lot of people in New York, especially, you know, folks like who are in the know, I don't think they were really surprised.
Yeah, he was rather sloppy with it. Like, he was moving.
He was
around.
Out here. He was kind of out here.
Yeah, he was my homegirl, like, so, regular.
Yeah, so I mean, I get it. I mean, the one thing I will say, man, is that this is gonna be really interesting in terms of how this plays out in court, because he's not going away quietly in the night.
No.
And there is probably about a 5-year span when they first started that she credited him with everything.
Yeah.
Getting her life back on track, saving her life.
Stopping her from drinking and drugging and all that.
Finances in order. So it's going to be very interesting to see how you're able to now say, this person doesn't deserve shit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just, and I'm not taking any side. I'm just saying as it relates to how these things play out in court, where they start taking, you know, clips from interviews and deposing you, and
it gets ugly.
Very, very ugly. I would really appreciate a gag order on both of them. Just because I just don't feel like I want to be.
That's a lot. Yeah,
I don't want to be a voyeur to that. I'm married. I understand how that shit could be a shakeup for a lot of people. This isn't just Mary and Ken Du who are going to be splitting apart. This is two families now who are, you know,
going to be together a long time too.
And listen, I don't know the ins and outs. Maybe they have already done that, but you know, divorce is heavy. It's hard. Lawyers are going to definitely tell him, you know, watch what you say, which is why you haven't heard shit from him. And you'll see how this plays out.
Yeah. And also, another divorce that came out was Jesse Williams from Grey's Anatomy, and just kind of, you know, not become a big name in social activism, as the filed for divorce from his wife of 5 years. They have two kids together. And then the rumor is he's dating Mika Kelly, who's actually Derek Jeter's ex-girl.
Damn near everybody.
Exactly. This is kind of, you know, people are kind of sad to see this end too, because they have two young children.
Just say it. Yeah, the second baby isn't that old.
They mad because he is
dating a white guy.
Yes, he is divorcing this very traditional looking black woman. And let me not say traditional, but a black woman.
Yeah, she's not like an IG model looking. Yes. You know what I'm saying?
This is a black woman who I'm really weirded out by the fact that people call her ugly, because she's not.
Ugly at all.
I'm like, what are y'all talking about?
She's not an Instagram model. She's a regular pretty woman.
You niggas are so wrapped up into IG that you just forgot how real women look. And the fact that he's now fucking with a white woman. Like, that's just the reality of it. And guess what, dude? You know, this is a part of the game. You in it. And I don't know what to tell you.
I mean, they definitely mad at Jesse right now. You know what I mean? He was the, you know, the guiding light. I don't know, man. I mean, you know.
And 5 years to me, I mean, 5 years is super short.
I'm not seeing a ton of backlash.
You're not?
Not about the white girl thing. Because I think even aside from that, what a lot of people really liked about Jesse was that he was so vocally supportive of his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just kind of like, oh, damn, like we thought this marriage worked. There may be some backlash that comes later, but not. It's weird because not all of the black dudes who date the white women get it. You know what I mean? Because even like, I mean, and this is a very old school example, but even if you look at like Poitier, like, you know, he's married to a white woman. I think it depends on how black you are as a black man. So are women disappointed? Sure. But they can't, I don't think any of us can stand up and be like, Jesse Williams has been fronting all this time with his wife. But if he was like a Tyrese or something, if he was like nigga anyway, there would be something. But I think there's disappointment. But I don't think anybody's going to cast him to the side, because other than that, it doesn't change the fact that he's been credible and he's used his platform and he's been supportive and he's been vocal.
It doesn't wipe that away,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think the other thing is too, speaking of him being vocal and being more of a social activist and having that presence, is that, you know, fame can really put a strain on a relationship. That is not some easy shit. Everybody is not signed up for it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think she's an executive too, or something. She does
real estate. But she really does real estate.
Yeah, it takes a toll on your relationship, the travel, being away from your family, It takes a toll on your relationship as a man and a woman. You are not, you know, nurturing a relationship at the pace that you maybe ideally thought you would be when you were getting married. So things change. I will say that 5 years is really a short period of time, because what I've found out, and from talking with people, like, usually divorce papers come after a while of shit not being good. Like people don't just walk into divorce lightly, right? Like, yeah. It takes a minute to get to that point. So when you consider 5 years, it was like, so what? Shit was good for like 2.5 years, 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, that's,
and you
that's,
got fucked that's up in think. The last like 6 months. You know?
Yeah. Like, you know, and are you throwing away your marriage because shit been rough for 3 months, or it's just, you know, and listen, I mean, obviously again, God bless them. I don't want to feel like, you know, a voyeur into the breaking up of a family.
Yeah. Me either. So, also wanted to just mention, there's more. We talked last week about Bill O'Reilly, with Fox and him being, you know, fired and you know, all that stuff. But a couple things to that. There's a, you know, a friend of the show who's involved in the lawsuits. Fire 100 on Twitter. She's been on several TV shows talking about her experiences as a temp working at Fox, and how Bill O'Reilly was like, kind of was her, not kind of was her, allegedly I could say, was harassing her. And she's been on MSNBC, and she's been on The View, and she's been on a bunch of shows, kind of with Lisa Bloom, the famous lawyer, talking about her case. You know, I haven't spoken to her, so I don't know where it's headed, but just want to kind of, you know, give her some love for standing up.
Yeah. And some support. I know that had to be, you know, tough. Yeah. That's not an easy thing to do. And this was years ago that this occurred. So, you know, obviously I'm not a woman. I can't speak to, you know, how that affects you or what that, you know, what that means to her. But, you know, we definitely want to show her some support and wish her luck on, you know, following through with this.
Exactly. And then the second part of this is, today or yesterday, I guess, there's now some racial lawsuits coming against Fox News as well. 11 people have sued for like the, you know, basically like allegedly, I gotta say it to everything, a horrible workplace environment where they were just asked, you know, asked all kind of like foul questions and asked to do, you know, racist stuff and the discrimination as far as getting promotions and raises and stuff like that. So, you know, Fox is going through.
I can believe that. I mean, the floodgates are open now, right?
Yep.
And people are seeing traction. And this is what always happens. You know, when folks always say, well, now that one person came forward, where all these other people come from? And the thing is that a lot of times people don't come forward for because of harassment or assault or whatever it is, whether it's in corporate culture, it's in your business, whether it's a famous person, because of the fact that they don't feel like they'll be heard. They don't feel like they'll be supported. And in a place like Fox, like you probably tell yourself like, this just is what it is and kind of like just take it.
Yeah.
And once you see that, like, oh shit, like they're being held accountable. Yeah. Actually, let me tell you what the fuck happened to me too. You know? Exactly. So it's like,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, there's a woman specifically that's named in all these lawsuits named Judith Slater. And she was the comptroller of the company. And apparently she was just like off the charts with the racist shit, like, you know, asking, you know, employees who's going to Africa after, you know, Trump tried to do the travel ban, like mocking the way employees spoke, like just, you know, constantly just being super foul to all any black employees. You know, it looks like most of the women and most of the people, the plaintiffs in the lawsuit are black women. Yesterday or the day before yesterday, and was kind of booed and, you know, and hissed by the audience for, you know, basically trying to say like her dad was like this great person. And, you know, a lot of people also were just very uncomfortable with her.
Well, she was saying he was a champion of women and families,
exactly.
Right, which, you know, she's never been, first of all. But secondly, the thing about Ivanka even being at this conference is that she was the other people she was on the stage with was like Angela Merkel. Like she was with heads of state.
Yeah.
She was with other heads of state. She was like with chancellors. You know what I mean? Like she was with like legit heads of state. And she is nowhere even remotely near.
Yeah, she's just his daughter.
Right. So first of all, it was just inappropriate for her to be there, period. Yep. Frankly. Because these were not other lay, I don't know if you say lay people, probably. And I know she's not tech, like, she has a West Wing office, but she's not a politician. You know what I mean? Like, she holds no official office. So the first thing was just that she was out of her depths to be there. It was inappropriate for the White House to send her there. And the second thing was, yeah, she got up and talked about how her dad has been like this champion of women and champion of families, which there's nothing historically, and there's nothing even in his current legislation to support or point to that, you know?
Nothing. My issue isn't with her right now. My issue isn't even with the White House. My issue is who invited her? Like, who allowed that shit to happen?
I think they put an invitation out to the White House, and Trump and them was
sent. And they sent her as a representative.
Yeah, to me, then that invitation should have been rescinded. That's how I feel.
Because, and I think a lot of the American, on the Republican side anyway, I think people were kind of shocked that the woman who was kind of being the moderator, well, not kind of, she was being the moderator of the panel, was like, you know, basically saying like, what you doing here? Like, why are you here?
Yeah,
like, what is your job entail?
She literally said that. She said, you are first order. German audience is not familiar. What is your role? Who do you represent? Do you represent your father? Do you represent the American people? Or do you represent your business? And it was kind of in response to this that I think Ivanka kind of meandered to this thing.
Again, I feel like there is always this undercurrent of desire for attention, publicity, hits, views.
Mm-hmm.
And we use people to get certain things, and then we shit on them incessantly for being the people that they are. What did they think Ivanka was going to say? That my dad's a piece of shit racist who wants to build a wall and say fuck everybody who's not a middle-aged rich white man? I'm just saying, like guys, why didn't she just be rescinded? Like, if you guys, like, there was no obligation to have her on the stage, is my point.
I guess they, well, I'm assuming they wanted some type of U.S. presence on the stage.
Well, but also the thing is, so to clarify, it wasn't that there was a moderator. The person who asked was a journalist. So really what happened is that the German press was like, fuck this bullshit. Why the fuck are you here? Mm-hmm. And that's what happened, which the American press, you know, doesn't really press that hard to do. So regardless of whether, you know, the summit itself wanted to try to be inclusive and let Ivanka rock for the sake of, you know, politics and playing playing nice, it was the German press who was like, fuck, who the fuck are you? Because they're not even really familiar with the rest of the Trump clan. Like that, like we are in America. So it's kind of like, who the fuck is this? She's the president's daughter. What the fuck is she here for?
And I get it. Like, you know, look, man, I'm possibly still a little uncouth and not really as refined, which is obviously the reason why I don't moderate panels, right? So I get all of that. But like, I just don't understand how, like, and for me, I would feel insulted as a person, as a woman who has accomplished as much as some of those other women that you mentioned have, that I would be sort of put on a level playing field with a first daughter.
It's also possible that Merkel set her up, like, to show how ridiculous the whole thing is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could have been it, but guess what we get? We get the middle white America seeing this, you know, white woman who needs protection from defending her father.
Mm.
That's what's feeding into the Rust Belt and the coal miners.
Okay, but Germany don't give a fuck about that.
Yeah, I get that. Germany don't give a fuck about that, but that's what it comes here. I mean, look, maybe I'm out of my element. I would have got the fuck up and been like, yo, I'm out. I'll see y'all niggas later.
I think the one thing I will say about Ivanka is that even with her, the Trumps, all of them amaze me just at their ability to just say shit that's just blatantly not true.
Just be lying.
But Ivanka seems to at least realize the spin she has to put on something and why, whereas like her dad and her brothers just be talking. Like yeah. They'll say some shit regardless of
She is the smartest one of them all. I always felt like even with Kushner, you know, that was going to be her inroad to getting all of the access that she needed to get. I always feel like she's a bit more strategic than the other ones. I think his sons are really not bright.
Yeah, they're not at all.
And she's savvier and more thoughtful. She's the son he wanted.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and I mean, look, I mean, obviously she has to take that role. Like if you're invited, I get why she would take that role. And I understand why, like, she's never going to shit on her father, like ever. It's her dad. She's never going to go against him. That family is never going to say a word of truth that is reflective of him being an asshole.
Yeah. Yeah, it was going to spin it.
But the funny thing is, I mean, and I know we keep saying these things and it's not going to get us anywhere, but had Hillary been in office right now and Chelsea, who actually was maybe qualified to go to this conference, this summit, been there, motherfuckers would have had a goddamn heart attack.
Oh my God. Why is she there? How could she?
What? How is she representing our country?
How does she even have clearance to go? I'm
sick of all these motherfuckers. You know?
While we're talking politics, I just want to mention, President Barack Obama, made his first speech since leaving the White House yesterday.
Looking tan and relaxed.
He don't even wear ties no more. He's like, I ain't wearing ties.
Fucking tailored suits, like just
fresh.
There's no stress. He's chilling.
Yeah, he's doing.
And got all the sleep.
Yeah, he's all chilling. Of it. He talked about the importance of community organizing, and you know, it was a student audience. I think it was University of Chicago, I believe. And he just talked about, you know, getting youth organized and getting youth galvanized to kind of lead us into the future.
And pointedly, did not say Trump's name or Hillary's name.
Not once. He made a joke when he first started about, hey, what's been happening since I've been gone? Yeah, because he, you know, and everybody kind of screamed and groaned like, nigga.
Lost Devin. Like, basically, nigga, come save us. And what Jeff was probably going to say next is that, you know, on the heels of this has come out that one of Obama's first paid speaking engagements is going to be at the tune of $400,000. And who's he talking to has something to do with finance?
It's some Wall Street bankers. I'm not sure if it's Goldman Sachs. I think it might be Goldman Sachs.
Some kind of Wall Street group, right?
Yeah, I think it's Goldman Sachs because they're also probably one of the few places that can even afford such a high price tag.
Right. So now there's backlash. From the white folks, there's this backlash about the fact that Obama is apparently going to get paid to speak, which is what every single president does when they leave office. Like, they
literally,
make their money.
Literally.
They make their money.
For the last, like, 40 years.
Yeah, they make their money off of memoirs, consulting. Sometimes they go into the private sector and consult, and speaking engagements.
Yeah.
So this is par for the course. So there's white people who are just mad that he's getting paid. But then there's some black folk, and it's the same black folk who, no matter what Obama did, and he was not a perfect president, but I think it's literally impossible to be a perfect president.
Absolutely.
No matter what Obama did, would be like, he ain't loud enough, he ain't mean enough, he ain't take a hard enough line, he did this, he did that, he bombed these people, he helped contribute to this collapse, he should have done this, he approved this, whatever. These people are like, how you gonna take money from the people who collapse the economy? And it's like, let him fucking let him live.
I don't understand. Like, was he supposed to tell these things no?
Right, like who is he gonna be like, no, my scruples won't allow me to take your fucking $400,000 goddamn dollars. Like,
for one speech.
Yeah, like, do you only want him to speak to like Black Greek organizations?
Hey, they wanted
college organizations.
They wanted to do speeches with your boy Tariq Shaheed.
With Tariq Nasheed and all.
Dr. Umar.
You want him to be down at the Jacob Javits Center doing some shit during Black Expo?
They want him to come down to Great Mount Calvary and talk to them boys down there that been cutting up.
That been getting in trouble,
and the deacons can't keep them together. That's exactly what they want.
But it's like look, there was this standard on him that he had to be this super Negro hero president. Like the motherfucker needed to go through office all 8 years with his fist in the air and calling everybody honky to be happy. And I'm just like,
I think that what you have to do is what I've done is that when there's an opposition, when there's an opposing view, I just really sort of take the rationale of the person. Like, is this person presenting an argument that is coming from a place of reason? Because a lot of these motherfuckers are not coming from a place of reason. This is a man who is about to, in one night, he is about to take in his salary.
His entire annual salary
for the entire year. Like, dude,
yeah.
First of all, if that was me getting fucking right. Cake, matter of fact, don't wire nothing. I want a cashier's check, and I'm going to the bank, and I'm cashing that motherfucker.
Well, between that and his book advance, right? Like, he's starting to set some things up. And my thing is, like...
Yes, he should.
The argument that Barack is taking money from, you know, Big Bad Wall Street when they're the enemy and regulations and housing bubble and blah, 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 recession, blah, blah. I get it, but at the same time, I do not believe that the people making that argument are really mad at him for that reason. I feel like if it wasn't that, they would find something else.
There's an underlying thing that I've noticed, especially with this particular instance, is that I often see people's rationale is, I'm poor. Like, I usually see that in the ridiculous tweet, right? In a thread. It turns into,
you can't relate to the common man.
Yes, if you don't make.
But
that
he also doesn't
money.
Have to relate to the common man anymore because
he's not the common man.
Running,
he's the president.
And he ain't running for shit no more.
No, no, no.
So guess what?
He wasn't
what?
Just the president. He was a two-term president,
right?
Who was also a U.S. senator who has had basically the last 15 years of his life in public service. Like, guys, and let me let you in on another little secret. Okay, they didn't come from fucking money. Okay.
Right.
So if he wants to set up and put his family in a financial position to have generational wealth, then you fucking take it. Okay.
Because a lot of people are even bringing up the point that like Obama just paid off his fucking student loans right before he got inaugurated. Literally.
Mm.
Like you're the president elect of the United States, and Sally Mae is still on your phone like, yo, so
I need
about
that
this
speed,
payment.
Speed that because I need
like,
that.
Like, come on.
Yeah,
that to me is insane. I mean, listen, he should go and make his money, and I don't have any objections to that. I really see, you know, working class people and people who are often, like I said, in the position of, you know, not having a certain level of financial success, you know, taking offense to the fact that, you know, he's getting $400,000 for a speech, or an athlete makes this much money, or a movie star makes this much money. It's like, guys, honestly, there's no more of a qualified person to give a fucking speech right now than the guy who just had a two-term presidency.
Seriously. And also, it's a guy who, before he even got in the office, had written, what, two books, three books? Like, he's already a published author. He's one of the greatest orators of our time. You know what I mean? Like, of course, he's going to do public speaking. Of course,
they
didn't
have this problem with Rudy Giuliani, who's fucking lame
out there
ass.
Consulting with private security firms, mm-hmm. but just because his ass was standing in the middle of some rubble on 9/11.
Basically.
Yeah.
Like, literally, he fucking fell up in life. You did nothing but walk around the fucking side.
He fell up in life like nobody's business, okay? He was on his ass. He was leaving. Okay, that was September 11th. He was not the mayor by January.
Yeah, well, he was already. We had already voted another mayor in. Hadn't we already voted? Yeah. I think we'd already.
Well,
voted.
No, it was coming up.
Okay.
It was coming up, but yeah, but like, dude, like, nobody had a problem with that. Nobody bitched about, you know, the Clintons making, you know, $15 million a year.
Well, some did, but they didn't bitch until Hillary started running for office. But yeah,
that's my point. But still, I'm during, just like, during the time that they were making that, and that's my thing, but it's also like,
how do you, like, do you expect these people to go back and work at the Piggly Wiggly? Like, you're a former head of state, like, you're a former first lady, you're a former president, like, maybe you can go in and lecture every once in a while in a class, but you cannot go back to a normal everyday job. They want you to get a job down at the plant.
No,
like, you want Obama to go back and be a fucking trial attorney or something? They are expecting them
to go into a life that is relatable to them. That is a life that they can identify with, that they can easily point to and say, okay, or to be it as some sort of in service of something, because you get this, you know, 200K a year pension or whatever, like, you know, whatever the fuck that is. Like, listen, God bless, but like, listen, man, none of these presidents are hurting, okay? That 200K they're getting in that pension, that's just ashtray money, bro.
Yep.
Like Jeb Bush just fucking bid for the Florida Marlins.
Yeah, with Derek Jeter. Mm-hmm.
Like, what are we talking about here?
Yeah.
Like, when you come from, you know what I'm saying, when his grandfather Prescott was fucking ripping everybody off, it was all good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And whatever, man.
So the last thing I want to talk about is this Shea Moisture controversy. Shea Moisture is a skincare company, and they had a huge gruffle a couple of days ago because they had an Everybody Gets Love campaign, which is like a 60-second snippet talking about women talking about how the shea butter products, you know, help them with their hair and stuff like that. But in the commercial, there was only one woman of color. I don't even know if she's necessarily black, real light skin with the kind of curly ringlet hair, so she could be, you know, various. And then everybody else in the commercial was white, which was crazy.
Including two redheads. Why do you need two redheads in any one commercial for anything?
Exactly. So the internet got a hold of this. Black Twitter went ham. You know, Shea Butter issued an apology. But another interesting thing that came out of this is the internet being the internet started doing some research on Shea Butter, and the top four women of Shea Moisturizer, the top four women are all white women. So that now people are like, this company's full on run by white girls, and we thinking, you know, we buying black, and you know, meanwhile we getting, you know, bamboozled, you know. So I mean, now you being the black woman here,
So there's a few things, right? And there's two sides to this argument. The one side is that this is part of a larger campaign. So Shea led the campaign last year, the commercial spot that was about taking quote unquote black hair products out of like a special aisle into the mainstream beauty aisle. That was Shea Moisture. And, you know, they get carried in Target and Walgreens and CVS and all that stuff. So they already get like a prominent look, and they're trying to expand their demo, and they're trying to reach white women, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, or non-black women or whatever. Now, the thing is, aside from just the concept of, okay, you're turning your back on the base that supported you and made you who you are, and also the base you were created for. Like, let's not front like Shea Moisture wasn't created for black women. There's also the fact that they've started changing their formulas for their products so that it can work better on a wider range of hair, but that also means that it doesn't work as well
on black hair,
on specific types of black hair, right? Mm. So there's also that. It's like you're changing your formulas, you know, the things that we loved about you in the first place, like you're changing all of that in order to gain this base. And it's been proven in the past that like this doesn't really work for ethnic hair care products. Like Carol's Daughter had to go bankrupt and start all over again because they did the same shit. They started changing their packaging. They started changing their products. They started changing their formulas because they were trying to reach more people. And it's also like there's a way to be, to have wide appeal without having to completely like exclude a demo. Mm. The other side of the argument is from people like, yo, this is how business works. You reach a certain point, you expand your base, you know, you try to get more dollars, you do whatever. So I see a lot of people being like, I'm not mad, let Shea Moisture do what they do. I understand both sides, but I think what this comes down to, which is what it often comes down to, is just about tone and about the way things happen, right? Like, the commercial, you ain't need two redheads in a commercial, B. Like, you didn't. Like, you just didn't. Like, you just didn't. Like, you just didn't.
It was, like, OD white. Like,
yeah, like, it's way white. And you could have put another darker skinned sister in it. And granted, they had another spot ready to roll out right behind it. That did have darker skin
your hair women. Hair
so,
women.
So obviously this was part of a bigger campaign.
Mm-hmm.
But still it's about tone. And it's about how you do it. And there was a woman who works with them. Who said she saw the idea for the spot. And explicitly told the room, don't do it. Twitter is gonna drag you.
Really?
And apparently they just
It's a white woman or black woman. Not that
a black woman, but told a room full of maybe
for the white woman.
Well, I think she said there were 100 people, maybe only 10 black women. But you know, the people, the decision makers aren't those white women. They're white men.
They're white men.
Even though they're white women, they're white heads. But the people who push the button are the white men. But she said she explicitly was like, Twitter is going to drag you. And they thought they knew, and I've actually been in that situation before,
where you try to warn somebody,
that they don't think it's real.
Wow. I mean, do you think that the company is gonna suffer like a lot? Cause I don't know anything about the company. Like, you think they're gonna suffer a lot, like as far as business goes, or they'll just, you know. It'll be all right.
I think they'll survive this. I don't think that this is the end of the world for them. It's touch and go for me. I don't know how to feel about it.
What do you think, Nye?
I think there are some folks who are gonna start looking in other directions. Because the thing is that the hair market has expanded.
It's exploded.
So you don't need to like. Just do just them. You got options.
You don't need to do just them, but on the flip side of that, there's a certain amount of brand loyalty. If somebody has a Shea Moisture product that they love to death, they're not going to just stop using it out the blue, because it also takes a really long time to find another product that works for you and adopt it and really like put it into your routine. If you've been using Shea Moisture XYZ for 3 years, it's going to take a minute to find some whole new shit.
I've been using Shea Moisture products. They have some products specifically for men. I enjoy it. I love that this was a Black-owned company. That was a big part of it for me. I also like the products. I like I said, I really don't know how this is going to play out, because one of the things I think that often happens with businesses is that this is, you know, like you said before about Carol's Daughter, like this is the point where do we grow or do we stay here? And I think a part of Black women is that while this wasn't an aggressive attack on them, I think that the tone in advertising, in conversations, in, you know, social issues has been, you know, particularly for Black women, is like, we're just not enough. Like, it just wasn't enough for us to be supportive of your shit.
Well, also, I think it's the overall thing. Like, the commercial was about white women and their hair journey. And there's also an underlying theme of Black women being really tired of white women trying to co-opt the natural yes. hair movement. Like, overall, all of a sudden, white women want to, you know,
talk about struggles with hair and all this other shit. My suggestion would have been to them to create another arm of this company. To leave Shea Moisture as a brand here and create another extension of this of this company for a wider range of hair. Mm-hmm. Because this right here is even the name wasn't, you know, like,
yeah, it's it, like you got identified Black. Come on.
You know, the wording, when you look at the old packaging, because I still have all the old stuff. I actually bought one new packaging, and you can sort of see the difference in the packaging, right? Like, it doesn't
look like the handwritten script anymore. Yes. Now it's more of a black lettering.
It's much more brighter. The colors are brighter.
Yeah.
They're not as muted as they once were.
The other colors were kind of more ethnic, or kind of more like tribal.
I know somebody who is who knows the owner. And he wrote a very, really good Facebook post just saying, listen, you know, this was a mistake. This was an error. You know, we understand he needs to be, you know, these folks need to be held accountable. But, like, let's come up with some solutions on how we can maybe, you know, fix and solve this versus just we're not fucking with them no more.
The other thing is apparently they now Bain Capital, which is owned by what's his name? Who ran against Obama in 12?
Mitt Romney.
Mitt Romney, which is his company, apparently is now an investor in the company.
Let me tell y'all a little secret. Okay. You motherfuckers always want like niggas always want, you want 100K a year, you want benefits, you want all of this shit, and like, where do you think all of this money comes from? How do you think funding happens? How do you think getting a marketing plan? How do you think being able to hire advertisers or people to grow a company? A company very rarely grows in a pocket at a pace that doesn't allow them to take on debt. In order for a company to grow, you have to go out on faith at some point. You have to look at the markets, and you have to have indicators and predictors and things of that nature. Like, this is how business works. And while I don't know if those women were consultants for Shea Moisture or if they were employees for Shea Moisture, the four white women that you had spoke about.
They're employees.
No, they're employees. They're like vice president of brand strategy and all kind of shit.
Yeah, well, guess what? When you take on, and this is also another argument, like, you're not, there comes a point where growing your business with only Black dollars is it's not going to be enough to continue to grow. Sure, you can maintain a business, right? But if the goal for you is to grow this business, then, yeah, I mean, you got to do that. Like, I don't know about Bevel. I know Bevel is a Black-owned company, and they were apparently approached by, like, Revlon or something like that, and dude turned down $500 million.
Damn. Yeah.
He was like, nah, I'm good. So,
he has a lot of celebrity, a lot of silent celebrity investors.
That's
But he'll probably grow, yeah, and his overhead is low because of subscription, but... to your point, the woman who owns Miss Jessie's, is it the woman who owns Miss Jessie's? I think it's the woman who owns Miss Jessie's. They were bought by either Revlon or L'Oreal. And she was saying that when the announcement came out, at first she had a lot of backlash about being a sellout. And she's like, but this is what we create. We create companies to eventually be able to sell them to larger companies.
This is
still own them, not give them up and turn them over and have them. And that's the fear, I think. People fear that what happens is this: you have this big buyout, and everything about the company that people love that got it to a certain point goes away.
Well, I also think too that we have to. I think for us culturally, our folks, I think when we see a business, when we support a business, when we start a business, when we're engaged in a business that is particularly Black owned, that we have such an emotional investment in these companies that it far exceeds even the people who are doing the day-to-day emotional investment, right? And we have to find a line because people live, yes, that's what people do. You buy a company, you start a company, you grow a company in the hopes that you can fucking cash out. Like, who, you know, who wants to be toiling and dealing with fucking CVS buyers, you know, 20 years later? You know what I'm saying? I want to fucking cash out. I want my $40 million payout.
Wait, this nigga turned down 500M?
That's reportedly. And again, again, I say, you know, he still has to run a business. And while his products are very expensive at Bevel, and they're probably very good, I just know that he's not paying, like, he's not paying people $30,000 a year over there.
Yeah.
Okay. Somebody's got to make that bottom line. Okay. And you don't operate in a right now business. This is not a mom and pop soul food restaurant where, you know, I'm paying everybody out the till. You know what I'm saying? Like, You may not get your funds need to be recovered. You still have debt that you have to pay down. You still have overhead you still have to pay constantly. Even though it's a small overhead, there's still an overhead. There's office space, there's storage, there's shipping. There's all sorts of shit that goes with a company. It's right. Not just, you know, like these niggas are not in a kitchen whipping some shit up and throwing it in a mason jar and selling it at the street
fest. Yeah, exactly. Fry up that fish, Earl. We got to get out here.
like that's not what they doing. Like, you got workman's comp. You got all sorts of fucking insurance. You got liability costs. You probably have a shitload of lawsuits. You got in-house counsel you got to pay. You know, that shit ain't cheap. That shit is not cheap, my nigga. And you still got to eat. You still got to put food on your table.
Yeah.
So. I don't know all the ins and outs, but I'm saying there are complexities to running and operating a business and growing a business that I don't think people who, you know, think that, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, you know, I'm not shitting on entrepreneurs and no disrespect, but my nigga, you sell Five Links phones and body matches, my nigga, you selling girdles and tea. T-shirts. Like, that's not, like, you don't have.
I'm a boss, bitch. There's,
until, like I tell people all the time, until there's a family that is depending on you to put food on their table, my nigga, you can't tell me shit. You can't say nothing to me about running a business.
Right. And you're right. There's more to it than people get. And that's a lot of the people that I saw who were kind of jumping in with the, like, yo, they're trying to expand, they're trying to grow. That's what they were saying, was like, listen, as an entrepreneur, like, I have a whole different point of view on this shit.
Yeah, it's like, yo, man, like I get that I may have a small business that's operating in Brooklyn that's, you know, that may just be identifying with this one demographic. That doesn't mean that that's what I want to do for the next 15 years or 20 years of my life. I want to grow my business. I want to have a storefront. I want to be able to expand into, you know, Manhattan. I may be able to, you know, all sorts of shit. Like, people have dreams and visions and things that they want to do. It's not just about, you know, I want to keep this a small mom and pop shop. You know, God bless, you know, Mr. Earl and Miss Shirley for running their business down at the corner for 30 years, but not everybody wants to do that shit.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it feels like it was hot on Shea Moisture, but it feels like they might have weathered this storm, and I think they're going to be all right.
I don't think they're going to go out of business. I don't think it's going to be that.
You think they're going to actually lose business, or you think it's going to be like,
I think
I went down to the beauty parlor, to the beauty shop, Sally's beauty shop, and they had it on sale. So I went on and bought it, even though I don't fuck with them.
I think they might lose a little bit of business. I do think that this also, kind of blew the lid open, because that's, might be exaggerating, but I also think there's a lot of people who didn't realize that they were changing their formula who knew about it now that this happened, because that was part of the dialogue. Mm-hmm. So I even saw a lot of women, like, I was wondering why this shit wasn't working the way it used to work on my hair anymore. And like, folks were hipping people to the fact that, like, yeah, the reason that Shea Moisture is at Marshall's now is because of the old formula. So I think that there are some women who, or some longtime Shea Moisture users who may leave, if not just because of if not because of the campaign, because the product changed, right? And that happens with a lot of products. Like, they start fucking around with the formula, you don't like it anymore. So, and like I said, there's new companies out there now. There's Cantu trying to blow its way into the marketplace. Like, there's other stuff that you can choose from.
You got options.
You got wild options for black hair care right now. Like, a gang of them. And some of the mainstream lines are starting to also do stuff that's more targeted to curls.
Specific culture, yes.
Yeah, like curls and thickening.
Natural hair and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, like natural hair stuff for twists. You know, like all that type of shit.
And let me just say this one last thing. An investor does, he puts, or that they put money into companies in with the expectation of a return. This is not a loan. This is not them saying, yo, we're gonna infuse you guys with $20 million of capital and we expect $20 million back.
Yeah.
Like, that's not how this works. They're expecting their $20 million and some, and they're expecting to grow the business so that way they have a percentage. And this is what businesses do. This is why, you know, Target has groceries now. Mm-hmm. You know, Target didn't always have groceries, but they wanted you to be a one-stop shop. Why the fuck not? We could take out a couple of these aisles here, you know, put some chicken, some lettuce in there.
Yeah, and some now grapes.
Now you don't have to go anywhere. You come here and you can get dinner for the night. You can get, you know, your paper towels, your medication, one-stop shop.
Yeah.
That's what happens. So that's why you don't see the fucking butcher anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, God bless them all.
They be all right.
That was a random black man statement.
Yeah.
They're like, well, God bless.
God bless them all. I just use Johnson's haircare product on my shit. I'm good.
This nigga got pink what? Lotion on the counter.
Hey, you know, shit. Well, don't
some damn Dax.
Don't change colors. It don't work. You just soap
some
for
blue
eight.
Magic.
You just soap for eight and keep it moving. So we're going to wrap it up, and we will see y'all next week.
Later.
Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast. Talk to you next week.